Magda, quite some time has unfolded since our last catch-up. I know that you have been traveling all over the world and in different forums. Let's pick up where you want to start in terms of the last couple of months from your perspective.
So maybe, I mean, obviously a lot has happened and a lot of it has been driven by Trump coming into power and, you know, things changing day by day, literally. And, you know, when I look at what he's doing, I always go back to the, you know, art of a deal. So what you are seeing is exactly what I thought, which is he starts high. You know, he doesn't start his negotiating position from the bottom. He just goes to the extreme high and then is very quickly, willing to start negotiating and negotiate significantly lower. But of course, his tariffs were insane. But, you know, if you look at it just purely from a negotiation perspective, it was brilliant. You know, he stays in many cases with a minimum of 10% tariff, while other countries feel that, that they actually have won in this negotiation by virtue of getting themselves down to, 20% tariff. I mean, if you look at China today, he's cut these duties to 30%, but it basically means that since he's been in power, president going back to his, last presidency, he's got import duties of 40% on China. And that's the negotiation.
We've heard repeatedly that he's transactional. And that's, I suppose, what you are reiterating now, is that he wants to make a deal and he starts it on his terms, effectively.
He starts it on his terms. And you need to, always appreciate that he's a businessman, whether good or bad is obviously up for debate, but he's a businessman first, politician second. So
now let's talk a bit about South Africa and U.S. relations and your thoughts on that front.
All-time low. I hope that Tsebisi John is going to do a valiant job of trying to somehow repair those relationships. But, we've got a tendency to shoot ourselves in the foot, of course, particularly when it comes to these relationships. So, while the relationship is fraught, clearly, while we have 80 people pretending to be Afrikaner farmers, refugee status in the United States, I mean, you actually have to laugh. I mean, it is laughable. But having said that, our own citizens went off to Washington and literally took pot shots at South Africa in an environment where, Elon Musk has the power that he has and he is not a friend of South Africa. So any excuse to put us in the spotlight. So there we have 80 people, farmers, seeking refugee status. And then there we are attending Putin's show of force parade. So we're at a time where we are trying to do deals with United States. There we are on the global stage, taking positions which are diametrically opposite to what US is doing. How is it possible?
Now, Ramaphosa has mentioned that he and Trump have agreed to sit down. Do you think that that is going to happen sooner rather than later?
Later. I think Trump is busy sitting down with, Xi Jinping rather than with Cyril, unfortunately. And, when I look at South Africa right now, I think the biggest issue we have is that ANC has not realized that they are no longer a majority party. And what they have not realized is that they do not have a free rein on mixing of party ideology, just ANC's ideology, with country politics. They had a free rein on that. They, for 30 years, they had absolute free rein to do as they pleased. And they have not gotten used to the fact that that is no longer permissible. So when you are sending, representatives to Russia, Are you doing it on behalf of ANC? Are you doing it on behalf of the country and South Africa? So maybe you should clarify that before you appear in Russia.
I want to focus on the current situation with regard to the budget, which is now going to be tabled on the 21st of May. Do you think that the dynamic within the government of national unity has shifted significantly, where the Democratic Alliance is now a partner at the table rather than a guest at the table?
No, I don't think they're a guest, but I do think that, you know, from both sides, there is a major problem in terms of calling this a partnership. So you've got two things, you know, you've got exactly what I just said, ANC not getting used to, you know, signing off on anything. And the budget is the best example. And here, you know, I'm not taking any pot shots at National Treasury. I think they do a valiant job under the circumstances. But they have become used to presenting a budget, which they have worked on very hard, balancing the books, which are difficult to balance. But what they have not realized is the shift of power. That it's no longer, here they are, present the budget, Cyril looks at it, you know, in an afternoon and signs it off. So they did not follow the procedures. And I think, you know, those new realities have to kind of sink down through all the institutions, that it's not business as normal as business as 40, you know, for 30 years. And then when you've got DA, they need to figure out where they need to compromise and where they need to, you know, to negotiate and which positions and which fights. And I'm not saying that, you know, the Employment Equity Act isn't the fight they should be having. But having said that, they need to get used to actually being a political party that does compromise, as opposed to a political party which, you know, lived by virtue of taking pot shots at ANC for 30 years, pot shots. Whereas they actually need to start to learn how to negotiate. But that goes for both sides of the equation. And, you know, it is essential that this government of national unity holds. You know, I was at a dinner party in London on Saturday. And I sat next to the head of trading from Goldman Sachs and his head of trading for emerging markets. And what he said to me, I mean, the first question he asked me is whether I believe no will hold. And I, of course, you know, being a patriotic South African, said absolutely, absolutely. But he said to me, you know, looking at the politics of South Africa, his biggest issues are actually twofold in terms of investing in South Africa. One is clearly foreign exchange controls. So it's difficult to take money out of the country, which they don't like. And the second thing is they don't believe. They look at the government. They think it's a very risky government. He wasn't even going granular into the budget. He was merely saying, okay, South Africa is only one of the emerging markets we look at in terms of investments. And too many uncertainties in South Africa, other emerging markets are looking a lot more interesting. Egypt came up as an amazing market to look at.
If you were running South Africa right now, what would you change up, given the conversations that you're having in different forums? What would you change up with immediate effect to make South Africa investable?
So, you know, I think, and so I'll use an analogy just now of what I heard in the United States a month ago. But basically, you know, what we are not seeing, and, you know, it hasn't changed under this government of national unity, and that is listening to business. So, you know, if I was, as I always said, if I was president for a day, which I'm not indeed going to be, so let me not be presumptuous for a second, but I would, the first order of business would be to call 20 most, you know, powerful CEOs in the country around the table and ask them the very question you've just asked me. You know, this isn't a one-person answer. It's a business South Africa answer and involve business South Africa, because they, at the coalface of attracting money to South Africa, they deal with multinationals. they deal, you know, it's not government dealing with companies that we want to invest in South Africa. You know, your asset flows, government bonds, asset managers, you know, that's hot money. We need fixed foreign investment. So listen to business. And, you know, the analogy I want to use, because I promised to chat to you about this, and that is this Yale summit that I attend. And fortunately, a number of these statistics have come into the public domain. So, you know, via articles written by Yale. So at least I can, you know, quote some statistics because these are articles invisible to South Africans. But basically, you know, I attend this forum. It's a summit of top CEOs engaging with U.S. politicians. I don't know why I'm there. You know, I blend into the wall. I'm not, you know, so you know, I don't know why I'm there. So let me not, you know, please don't draw any assumptions from this. But it was very interesting to me. You know, I attended one of these summits, and they're really powerful summits, in December. And in December, the mood in the room was pragmatic, you know, in terms of engagement with Trump administration. I attended a month ago. And a month ago, people were very reluctant to talk or criticize. But there was a very interesting poll, because part of this is, you know, everyone gets to vote anonymously and then the results are put up on the screen. And, you know, months ago, one question was asked, has the time come for business to collectively, you know, deal with Trump administration and speak out collectively as a collective voice? And, you know, people vote anonymously. And over 60% of the people said no, 60% of CEO. So then the next question was, how much do the stock markets have to fall before business starts engaging with government collectively? And the general consensus was just around 20%, which I think the tariffs kind of almost drove us there. So engagement with business, to me, is key.
Now, there are those who would say, but Cyril sits down with business, and we hear of all the collaboration that is happening between public and private sector. Are you saying that it's not enough in terms of the engagement and the roundtables?
Well, you know, it's one thing to sit around the room, smile and nod, and, you know, everyone has some coffee and some cookies on the side. But what you need to see is the tangible engagement and listening on broader things than just public-private partnership in infrastructure development. You know, you actually need to listen to business at the policymaking level, not just at, you know, what private-public partnerships can we enter into in terms of building a road. So there's some positive engagement. You know, it's for instance, Transnet is a good example of that. But there needs to be a broader engagement at the policymaking and, you know, the optics of what we do.
Because perhaps one example of that is NHI. If we're talking about policy and where we're going and the optics, would you like to weigh in on what NHI is saying to everybody?
It's completely unimplementable. So I look at it and you just go, you know, these kind of acts and regulation will face years and years of battles in courts. They are fundamentally unconstitutional. And South Africa cannot afford it at all, at all. And even if we could afford a fraction of it, you know, you need to compare that to the experiment that UK has been running with NHS. And for years and years and years, socialist state of United Kingdom. And NHS is fantastic when it comes to emergency care. But any kind of care where, you know, you need an operation, you need a, you know, hip replacement, knee replacement, and that's a 5-year waiting list. So, you know, even in a country where huge amounts of money is spent at this kind of provision of public health services is dysfunctional. Not that it's, you know, not that the current Labour government is going to help, completely dysfunctional. So to think that even if we had a fraction of the money that this requires is, you know, laughable.
You've been through many, many different cycles in South Africa, and you've built a business from the ground up. How are you feeling at this juncture, given the history that you've endured in South Africa? Are you more positive or less positive than you have been previously?
Well, let me perversely. First of all, I'm always an optimist. So that's the first thing. But, you know, I am feeling a lot more positive because we now do not have a monopoly on politics in terms of ANC. And a good, you know, the good illustration of that is that, you know, when I was feeling very negative about South Africa, I actually stepped down as CEO, started a business in the UK, which, you know, I still have, and I still have to kind of, you know, co-found it. I have to help manage that business. But I've come back to Signia as a CEO, full-time CEO, and I have no intention of leaving. And so, you know, I wouldn't be doing that if I didn't feel positive about South Africa, because, you know, I have established a life in the UK, be it, I, you know, spending half time between the two countries. But again, if I wasn't feeling positive, I would not have stepped back as a full-time CEO.
And your business, Signia Magna, is very dependent on the health of the South African consumer. We're in a tough economic environment, you know, GDP forecasts coming in at 0.9% appear to be hopeful at this juncture. What are you seeing in the underlying consumer behavior insofar as it relates to your business?
So when we're in the toughest business of them all, not in the toughest, but very, very cyclical business, because, you know, as asset managers, our fees are really a percentage of assets. It's a very cyclical economy, but it also very dependent on growth, and we don't have any growth. So, you know, right now it's very tough market conditions for asset managers, all asset managers. And, you know, asset managers and assets depend on job creation. They depend on companies employing people, not restructuring and retrenching people, in which case, you know, their retirement savings go to zero. And a good example of how much stress there is among consumers is this two-pot system. And hundreds of thousands of people started withdrawing the permitted, you know, 30,000 rand from their retirement savings. I mean, it's a pitiful amount after tax. Pitiful. And yet, everyone rushed at that money as if it, you know, was going to save them. So South Africa is tough. South Africa is, you know, tough in terms of asset managers, but, you know, that's a given. You know, in terms of growth, look, we've been in this low growth scenario for as long as I can remember. But so are other countries. I mean, UK, you know, it was, again, laughable when, you know, the government, effectively the Chancellor Reeve, stood up and she very glibly cut growth forecasts for UK from 2% to 1%. And no one blinked. Like, literally no one blinked. You've got this massive announcement of saying virtually we're not going to have any growth in the UK. And people just don't understand how that translates into prices, into, you know, job creation. So South Africa has always been in the tough spot. But, you know, there's one thing that we have which is going for us, and that is this informal economy. So, you know, there's a thriving informal economy, which, you know, unfortunately they don't pay tax. But that is basically what, you know, holds the wolf away from the door. And we've always had that going for us.
We are just a couple of days away from the budget, and I did start at the beginning of our conversation mentioning the budget on the 21st of May. What are you expecting? Do you think that we can redeem ourselves and put forward a pro-growth, pro-employment budget at this juncture? You're already shaking your head.
No, I think it's going to be, and I don't think it's going to be hugely disappointing budget. I don't think it's going to be a positive budget. I think it will be a budget which is in line with expectations. I think they would have fiddled the numbers in order to get over this expected revenue of, you know, 2% VAT increase. I think it's not going to be any surprise. I think literally they will fiddle with, you know, cutting expenses a little bit here, cutting expenses a little bit there. And then probably, you know, not delivering on the budget because the unions will stand up and demand above inflation wage increases again and, you know, start high like Trump. Start at 15, settle at 4, which is, you know, still above inflation. So, you know, I don't expect anything positive from the budget. I don't think it will be hugely disappointing. I think it's a budget that will not drive foreign investment into South Africa. So that's the problem.
A couple of additional questions. We are almost out of time. I know I've taken up a lot of yours, but the G20 presidency, there are a lot of businesses out there who are making a lot, for want of a better word, about our G20 presidency. We're into it. What are your thoughts on how we are faring?
You know, if your largest trading partner, United States, doesn't pitch up, that tells you a lot about what you can achieve with, you know, G20 presidency. So I don't think a lot is achievable unless you can bring US to the party. And of course, we are not doing that at all. So I think we're missing out on a huge opportunity to showcase South Africa on a global stage by virtue of the fact that, you know, the optics at the moment are terrible.
Can we redeem ourselves? Is there any opportunity? As you said, the US president is now concerned with other issues. Do you think we can get a seat back at the table, or have we lost the opportunity?
Look, I think the opportunity was to stay in the shadows and not to poke our heads up. That was the opportunity, which unfortunately we have not done. We are right there as, you know, the one country in Africa that US is literally, you know, taking pot shots at. So allowing us back to the table, I mean, are we important enough in Trump's life? I don't think so. I think it will be, you know, extremely difficult for Mtsebisi, who I do know personally. He used to be a board director of Signia, and he is an eminently, I mean, an incredible diplomat. I think he will struggle to achieve very much. And again, the very fact that you've got this, you know, 80 refugees pitching up at, you know, the airport, and that kind of makes the news because it's sensationalist. I think it will be very, very, very difficult for us to, as you say, redeem ourselves.
Is there anything that I haven't asked that you think you should be answering?
I think, you know, the interesting thing is what's next for United States. So, you know, will they ever, you know, recover in terms of, you know, being the kind of global dominant power? And, you know, there are two views on that. One is that this is it, that, you know, they will never recover the trust that they had, not that they potentially want to be the, you know, defender of Europe. And I think they, you know, quite right in saying Europeans need to defend themselves and not rely on United States. But will ever, you know, those diplomatic ties be restored, or the trust in United States be restored? So there's a view which says, of course not. You know, this is all lost. US has, you know, will never recover. The world order has shifted. And, you know, there's another view which I tend to share. That is the contrarian view. And the contrarian view is that you can never forget that US is the largest economy in the world. You can never forget the Trump administration actually only has 4 years in power. And you can never forget how short people's memories are. And consequently, I honestly think that they will recover to what they were before. And that, you know, as I said, trust is transactional. At the end of the day, I'll go back to your word transactional because it's also a word that I love. First of all, Americans are transactional, which is great. You always know where you stand. So Americans as business, American business is transactional. American relationships are transactional. And I think as, you know, as I said, memories are short. Give it, you know, a few years and, you know, and it might very well happen under Trump administration that some things would have shifted. Europeans would have spent more money on defense, which is, you know, the right thing to do, given that, you know, they've been quite lazy about it. But I tend to think that, you know, being pragmatic about it, everyone will forget this very quickly.
Good catching up, Magda, as always. Thanks so much for joining us here on BizNews.
Absolute pleasure.